You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It's a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and more importantly, on your life. Listen and follow Jill on Money on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We will be joined by the Yankees general manager, Brian Cashman. He'll come up at 4 o'clock. But let's get to your calls. Yankee fans, Met fans, Micah Parsons has demanded a trade. There is a lot on the table. 888-808-1019. Nick is calling from Queens. What's up, Nick?
We already know what's up. The Mets won the trade deadline. We got no rentals. We got win now. We got guys that got to compete to get paid. And you know what the Yankees got? Let me tell you, Tiki. You're a new Yankee fan. Same old Yankees. Same old Yankees. Let me tell you. Brian Cashman. Oh, we won the trade deadline. We won. We got everybody we need. We're going to go everywhere. We won everything. No. 8 months. You know what's going to be said on this radio station? Evan, tell them.
I don't know what's going to be said.
Buy the Cashman.
Oh, fuck. Buy the Cashman. You may be right because that's what we do or that's what fans do when things don't go well.
Yeah.
But it is unfair.
Feels like it's not. It can be kicked off this season, like kick it away this season.
Not really. They went to the World Series last year and Yankee fans still do it. So
yeah,
he's right that if the Yankees don't
what
win.
What else could he have done?
You're speaking rationally.
I know. I'm just a rational person.
I know, but he's right that the Yankee fan will then turn on Brian. Right now they love Brian because I think they like the trade deadline as they should, but he is right that if things end badly, unless it ends with a World Series, it ultimately turns into blame Brian Cashman. Now, I don't think they should do that. I think he just had a great trade deadline. I look at this roster and I say, they're good enough. If they don't win, it's the player's fault. It's the manager's fault.
Right.
That's how I view it. But the other thing that our last caller said that is really unfair, and it shows it's like politics today. You don't actually care what your party says, because whatever they say, you're just going to agree with them. You're just going to be like, that's right, that's right. Doesn't even matter. That's what we do sometimes with sports, and we shouldn't. Like our last caller said, David Stearns and the Mets won the trade deadline, and now the Yankees, they suck. If the Mets had acquired the same relievers the Yankees had required, acquired, Met fans would say, we won the deadline. Our bullpen is loaded.
Right. And we got controllability.
And you throw that in. So there's no way that you, if you're being fair, unless you're just going to be, you know, a sycophant, the way people are in politics sometimes, the way they're in sports, if you're going to take your glasses off and be fair, they both did really well.
Right.
So to say, hey, if we would have got those guys, I wouldn't have been happy. That's crazy. If the Mets got Camilo Duvall, we were talking about him a few days ago on the Rico Brogna. Now, I think there are differences between all these guys. There are risks with all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, both teams went out and, to borrow a phrase, went to town. Because I think both teams did that, improving their bullpens. Kendrick is calling from Suffern. What's up, Kendrick?
What's up, guys? No, it's a great week of sports here, Evan. And finally, MetLife is guaranteed a championship this weekend. So I don't know if you're going to see CM Punk and Gunther or you're going to go for Cody Rhodes and John Cena. But MetLife is winning, too.
That's a great way to look at things this weekend. It's a championship weekend for a change at MetLife Stadium.
For sure, for sure. You know, I wanted to call in because you guys touched on this earlier, and I know Brian Cashman's coming in, and I would love to ask the GM of one of the New York teams about the relief pitching and why they targeted so much of it. Because for me, you know, looking at the Dodgers last year and looking at both teams this year at the deadline, I'm starting to think that if you remember, Juan Soto hit it off Hunter Gaddis last year, and Devin Williams pitched in game two, and then obviously Alonso hit a home run in game three against the Brewers. Are teams trying to stack their bullpen to avoid, you know, playoff, I guess,
familiarity,
tendencies, and then familiarity, exactly? Because if you look at basketball, right, the regular season, it's three-pointers, it's run and gun, no defense, they change the game. in the postseason, it's you know, rebounding and defense. In football, it's these $30 million wide receivers, $50 million quarterbacks, and then it's run and defense that wins in the playoffs. In baseball, I'm starting to think that this relief pitching is what wins championships, and I'm curious if, because now they have three or four high-leverage arms in the pen, they could avoid allowing to see hitters and the relief.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It's a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and more importantly, on your life. Listen and follow Jill on Money on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Pitchers coming in. Back-to-back days.
Oh, it's a great point.
It's a really good thought. I mean, it's either that or, as we talked about a little bit yesterday, you know that starters just aren't getting as deep as they used to, even if you have a good start. Clay Holmes is a good starter for the Mets. We know he's capped at five and maybe a five and a third. And so you're going to need to pick up 12 outs at some point. And so you really need a lot of relievers. And so avoiding having to pitch them every day is something that I think you think about as the season winds down and when you get in the postseason.
Oh, that's an all of the above, because I think that the lack of trust in starting pitchers, the fact that starters don't go deep into games, the fact that this marketplace didn't have a lot of great starters available, and then you combine it with what I think is a really good point by Kendrick, because this has become a thing over the last few years. I remember it specifically in 2019 with the Yankees, where Aaron Boone had the lanes they like to talk about. Mm-hmm. This is a good lane for Adam Ottavino. This is a good lane for this left-handed reliever. And it makes sense on paper until the same hitters see the same pitchers over and over and over and over again in a best of seven series.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a great point that the more relievers you trust that you have, the less often you have to give them the same matchups. It's a great point. I think it's not the end-all be-all. Like, I don't think that's the reason why David Stearns, Brian Cashman, and a lot of general managers were really aggressive on bullpen arms. But I think it's a great thought, because in a best of seven series with all the off days, where you can basically use relievers every day, you kind of can. Mm-hmm. Game 1-2 and game 6-7, they're only back-to-backs. And then you've got that one set of games, 3-4-5, yeah, where, yes, it's back-to-back-to-back. So essentially, it's not crazy to have a reliever pitch in 6 of 7 postseason games in a series. And they're probably seeing the same hitters. Yeah. And by the time you get to game six, it's like, I've seen this guy a lot.
Also, think about what happened with the Dodgers a year ago. And once they got to the postseason, their starting rotation was severely compromised. So they had to go bullpen day.
Right.
And so because they were so deep with their bullpen, they were able to win a World Series. So you saw with the Braves, too, 3 years ago, whenever it was, 4 years ago that they won. So bullpens have, I think, an outsized importance in the postseason differently than it does in the regular season.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's important in the regular season, but I think in the postseason, it just gives you so much more versatility on what your plan of attack is.
Well, and also in the postseason, because of all of the off days, you just can use them more.
Yeah.
Like, I think the problem with the regular season, or this discussion in the regular season, because you even brought this up to me the other day when I was bitching about Mendy kind of punting a game with keeping Jose Buteau in, and you're like, well, you got to think about tomorrow.
Yeah.
Well, in the postseason, because there are so many off days, you never play more than 3 days in a row. You don't have to do that.
Right.
And so it allows you to be even more aggressive with your bullpen. Justin is calling from South Hempstead. What's up, Justin?
What's up, boys? You guys are talking about Happy Gilmore 2, and I'm baffled by the love that people are giving this movie. I have some quick reasons as to why I think this is one of, if not the worst movie that I've seen in over a decade.
Wow. I have not seen it, so fill us in, Justin.
All right. I'm not going to do any spoilers, but first of all, you guys know there's a ton of cameos in this movie. And I feel like it's an overuse of cameos where it takes away from the specialty of a cameo. If you go back to the first Happy Gilmore, when Bob Barker appears, it's so shocking, and you can't believe, oh, my God, they got Bob Barker. But if you have a cameo every single minute, it's not special anymore. It takes away from the specialty.
All right. Keep going, because I have opinions on all this. I saw the movie. I'm hearing you out. I didn't think it was the greatest of all time, but I certainly didn't think it sucked as the worst movie in 10 years. That's point number one. What else you got?
Okay. So I've never seen a movie have to actually show scenes from the first movie to remind audiences what happened in the first movie. Shouldn't you know going in, like, who's this movie made for? Shouldn't people be aware of these characters beforehand? They're actually showing, if you total it up, they're probably around 4 or 5 minutes of the original movie being shown in this new movie. Never seen it done in the history of cinema.
Wow, that's interesting.
I got one more.
Yes.
It is an ugly movie to look at. I heard someone today compare it to a T-Mobile commercial. Like, it just visually is a depressing sort of visuals to it. Did not capture the same magic of that first movie's visual. So I think on the top of all that, just it wasn't funny. The biggest sin I had with the movie was I didn't laugh once or twice.
Justin, that's the key to a movie, especially a comedy like this. And my critique on Monday was I didn't laugh nearly as much as I did for the original.
Right, the original, you're laughing out loud.
Oh, man, I was belly laughing. So that part, that's subjective. Like, I laughed a little bit. I was entertained, but I didn't laugh nearly as much as the original.
I don't know. Is comedy subjective?
Yeah. You find something funny I don't find funny.
Yeah, I laughed my ass off the whole movie and Evan didn't. So from that standpoint, it probably is subjective.
Absolutely. And our last caller said he didn't laugh at all.
I guess it's relatability. So it's subjective, but it's really, can you relate to what he's talking about?
It's if you think something's funny. Like, funny is very difficult to kind of, like, put your arms around.
You have to have a relatability to it. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense to you.
I don't know. So sometimes I laugh at stuff that I can't relate to. Right. I don't know. If at least for me, it doesn't work that way. Mm. It's just if I find it funny.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It's a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Listen and follow Jill on Money on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.